This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good Tuesday morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I am Christy Landwehr from Aurora, Colorado, and you are listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for August 18th. This episode is brought to you by the Certified Horsemanship Association. Good morning, horse world!
Houston, we have a problem.
Ability equals skill plus knowledge.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Here's a safety tip for you from the Certified Horsemanship Association.
Missed it by that much.
How can I change this to make it better the next time?
Help you, I can. Yeah.
Time for Training Tuesday on Horses in the Morning with the Certified Horsemanship Association.
Well, hi, everybody. Thank you for joining us this morning. We appreciate you being here. Hope you've had a cup or two of coffee to get started this morning because we got a lot of good stuff for you. Christy's here the third Tuesday of every month with the Certified Horsemanship Association. Hello, Christy.
Hello, Glenn. How are you?
Good. I'm so glad to have you back. It always seems like it's been a month since I talked to you.
Probably because it has.
You know, I never get to talk to any of my co-hosts in between shows. I mean, any of them. So it's always fun for me because I get to catch up, find out what's been going on over the month.
That's right. And I'll tell you, it also shows you how quickly a month passes, though. I cannot believe my children are already back in school.
Are they really?
Yes, they started today.
You guys start really early there in Colorado.
We're August people. We do not mess around with the whole September start date. We start in August.
Do they do a year?
So
is it considered year-round schooling or not?
No, it's not. But they only give them 2 months of summer. And I think one of the reasons for that is that, you know, they have to build in some snow days.
Oh, yeah. Like 100
And because even with our plows, you know, you sometimes still can't get the school buses to school. So they have to do that. And then we have this really interesting school where they get fall break for 2 weeks and spring break for 2 weeks. And one of those weeks is a power session, where the more advanced kids can go in and take unique stuff that isn't offered in schools anymore, like cooking and auto shop, things like that. And then the kids that are maybe having some struggles, they come in and they get extra help in reading or writing or arithmetic. So I think it's that program, too, that makes it so we have to go back a little earlier.
Gotcha. And so it is almost like year-round schooling, actually, because some of the year-round schools over here, they do still get a month off in the summertime, but then they get their 2 weeks and their 2 weeks and their 2 weeks. You know, they get their breaks every quarter. You know, that sounds
attractive, too. Maybe going towards that a little bit. Mm-hmm.
I don't know which would be better. I don't know. I kind of enjoyed summer, so I don't know. But that's wild that they're already back in school.
Yes.
Hey, we have a lot to do in the show today, but Jennifer is not with us. She is being lazy and has the day off. Actually, I have her working on some other projects this morning, so she has to help us get caught up on those other projects. So you're going to have to tell us what's coming up on today's show.
Oh, I love that. All right, on today's show, we have lesson plans during the ride and then homework for the riders. This is going to be by Amanda Love and Kara Musgrave, and we are very excited to have them up on the show soon. They run very different programs, and anyone listening, it's going to give you some great ideas to do things on and off your horse, during your rides, and in between your rides. So it's coming up soon.
And then you have early bird registration coming up for your conference.
We do have early bird registration, and I wanted to bring that up because this is going to be the last radio show that we do before early bird registration is closed, because it's closed on August 31st, so just coming up in a couple of weeks here. So by all means, if anyone still wants to use the HRN, Horse Radio Network code, for anyone listening to get our full conference registration at our member pricing, we would love to have you join us. It's going to be very fun, and unlike a lot of events in the horse world, we don't just make you sit in the audience and watch. We get you up on school horses that are provided this year by West Texas A&M University,
Oh,
and
cool.
You get to ride.
They'll be well trained.
They will be. Yeah. Yes, and they're all intercollegiate horses. So they do the Western Pleasure, the horsemanship, the hunter under saddle, and even the overfence work.
Well, I got to say something about conferences. As everybody knows, I've talked enough about it, that I went to a podcasting conference at the beginning of the month a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, I had attended the first podcasting conference there ever was. It was a new media meetup, actually, and it was back 2007, six, somewhere in there. And it was like the first one. There were only like 200 of us there, and that included bloggers, Christy, back then.
Wow.
It was bloggers and podcasters, like 200 there. It was out at a little tiny convention center in Ontario, California, right by the airport. And they just, you know, I had totally ignored the whole conference scene for a long time until this year. So 8 years later, I find out about the Florida Podcasters Association, and I go to a couple meetings with that. And then I find out about the new national. It's only second year for the National Podcasting Conference, just podcasters. And I thought, well, you know, I wasn't going to spend the money. It was going to cost, you know, it was going to cost a good bit to head out there to stay, to, you know, the entry fee and all that. And I was one of the best things I've ever done. So I highly recommend these conferences. I was ignoring them for a lot of years, and I shouldn't, because I learned so much. I was able to help a lot of people, too, you know, from my side, because we're kind of the veterans at this. But I also learned a ton, and there are a couple of things that we learned that we put into effect already. So, you know, it is important that you you attend these. If you're kind of out there, and this is the thing, podcasters are a lot like horse people. You know, unless you show a lot, you're out at your house. If you're training and not showing a lot, you're out at your farm, and you pretty much never get off the farm. You have to force yourself to go to the grocery store. It limits your circle of influence to the people, you know, that come out to your barn for lessons and those immediate people, and you don't get to talk to people that are like you, that are trainers and educators and things like that, in your case, in the CHA's case. And boy, what a difference it is getting out to talk to other veterans and to the new people. And you don't realize how much you know until you teach it, right? We always say that. And it's true. It is true. And I just can't recommend it enough. It is worth the money, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I agree. And whether or not it's coming, you know, to, for example, RCHA, International Conference of Learning from Others Instructors, and doing all of that and coming back with refreshed lesson plan ideas and things to really get you excited again about teaching in the arena and going out there and making it happen, or, like you said, going to something that's bigger and more broad-based. Like you said, you were the horse guy at the one that you attended, and I love being the horse gal. For example, when I go to an Optimist Club meeting, I have some dear friends that are in Optimist that I met through church. And they said, hey, Christy, you should go. We do a brain bowl through Optimus, and we need readers. And I gotten up there one time and read scripture for church, and I guess I pronounced all the biblical names and places right. So they thought, oh, you'll be a good reader. So they asked me to come be a volunteer reader at this event called Brain Bowl for 6th to 8th graders. And my goodness, was it wonderful. It's like Jeopardy for these kids. And we read 30 questions, 5 rounds, so 150 questions. And we look like Alex Trebek, like we know all the answers, where in reality, we don't really know anything at all. We have the answer in front of us. But what a great event. So then they asked me, well, now can you come to our local club, Horse Girl, and can you talk about horses to our optimists? Well, normally, Glenn, when I go around and I speak, it's at an equine affair event, or it's at the Rocky Mountain Horse Expo, or it's at our conference, or it's somewhere where there's all kinds of quote-unquote horse people, okay? I go to the Optimist, and I normally start a talk with, all right, how many of you own a horse? And normally, most of the hands go up. So I ask the Optimist, nobody. Okay, so how many of you have ridden before? About half the hands. I'm like, wow. All righty, how many of you know somebody that's ridden before? Well, a lot of them are grandparents, and they knew, and it was their grandkids, so most of the hands went up. So then I knew my audience. I'm like, all right, these are the grandparents that are paying for their grandkids to go and ride the horses. Got it. So then I could kind of steer my talk in that direction, and I set up a bunch of chairs, and I got one of the volunteers to come up, this old guy. He was awesome, and I round-pinned him. I didn't use any verbal at all. I just looked at him and said, you're the horse, you're over there grazing, I'm the person, and away we go. And pretty soon he was walk-trot cantering both ways of the arena. He was backing up. He was side-passing. He was doing a turn on the haunch. It was great. We had a great time. And he was up on two legs doing all this stuff, and it was all over. And we talked about horse behavior and moving, you know, and those kinds of things, and predator prey and all that stuff. And I got known as the horse girl in Optimist. And it was a great way to spread the word about what we do and hopefully get more people excited about our industry. So, yes, getting out of the box is a great idea.
You know, I had the pleasure while I was there of having lunch with Lee Cockerell, who is was the vice president of the entire Disney Corporation in charge of parks and hotels.
Wow.
So, you know, how many times do you get to meet a guy like that? And I just happened to be in Starbucks the one morning about 6:30 at the hotel, and he came in, and, you know, everybody at these conferences introduces themselves to each other. So I introduced myself. He sat down. We spent an hour together.
Oh.
And he, you know, he does a podcast called Creating Magic, which is all about leadership. And it's all about the lessons he learned in his 40 years in the hospitality industry and also at Disney, you know, as far as being a leader. And he said something very interesting to me. And it's the reason that people should sign up to go to the CHA one and anything else they can find is he said, you know, I have always made time for everybody. I tried to always make time for my employees. I tried to always make time for people I meet in Starbucks because you never know where that's going to lead. And he gave me a couple of examples of people he met or he mentored like that who ended up being executives of major companies. And he said, you know, I would have never had that contact or that thing happened in my life that happened later because I met this person and I was willing to spend some time and help him out. So
yeah.
He said, sitting here with you, I never know what's going to come of that, you know? So, and I said, I don't know what's going to come of this either, but he has a great, it's called Creating Magic. You can find it on iTunes. And it's called Creating Magic or Creating Disney Magic, The Impact of Mentors. So he talks about that and it's a great podcast. I've started listening to it now, but that contact I made in that restaurant could be the one that, you know, changes my life. You don't know.
You absolutely don't know. And you remember how last month we were talking about careers when CHA did our third Tuesday of the month, and the mentoring was such a big deal for both of our guests that we interviewed that day and the networking. They said, without that, what do you got?
Right.
You know, so I think that's huge.
And you don't get that staying at home. I don't care social media, Facebook or anything. And, you know, I'm the king of social media, right? I would have never met some of the people I met, and I've been invited to be guest now. They want to interview me and a couple of our hosts. I would have never had that happen had I not gone there in person.
True.
You know, as much as social media you think eliminates the in-person contact, it does not.
No.
It does not.
You need it badly still. I agree. Yeah. Plus, the energy is higher, and then you get to see the nonverbals and learn so much from that, too. I know. It's super. So, for those of there that are out there listening and you have your own, let's say, horse business or you just love horses, get out there and become the horse lady or the horse man at your church, at your Rotary, at your Optimist, at your Kiwanis, at your Toastmasters, at your kids' PTA meetings, at your, you know, soccer that you go to with your children or your grandchildren or whatever. It's just great to always share the love of what we do.
And you know what? That was the first time in history I've ever been called the horse guy. So
I love it.
All right, let's do this. Let's head off to our first guest.
Absolutely. We are thrilled today to have Amanda Love on. And Amanda is the horsemanship director at West Texas A&M University, which is in Canyon, Texas, right outside of Amarillo. She is the coach of the Intercollegiate Horse Show team there and also teaches numerous classes for the university. Amanda is currently on our board of directors for CHA and is an active rider. And something that not everyone knows about her is she also loves CrossFit. So excited, Glenn, because Amanda is going to be the host of our CHA International Conference coming up in October. We are going to be there at West Texas A&M University in Canyon right outside of Amarillo. And she's going to be providing all of our school horses that we ride and all of the accommodations. So we're thrilled that we're going to be out there in her neck of the woods.
Are you ready for all those wild trainers coming in from across the country?
We are getting more ready every day, but just like with every horse person, I'm sure we have some chaotic thing that happens at the barn on a daily basis to push that back. However, we are so excited to have all of those Certified Horsemanship Association instructors coming to town, getting to experience West Texas and our region of the country. Just that idea of sharing ideas and learning from each other and really building on our industry of certified horsemanship instructors out there. So we are very excited about the honor of being able to host the international conference.
Well, before Christy gets into the conference itself and a little bit about West Texas A&M, tell us a little bit about the town and the area.
Canyon, Texas, actually our namesake for Canyon, Texas is Paladura Canyon, which is the second largest canyon in the United States. It is a far cry from the Grand Canyon, we will be honest there, but it is a phenomenal town. It's right outside Amarillo, Texas. We are a town of about 12,000 people here in Canyon. And we are essentially America's beef land is what we are well known for. 30% of America's beef is produced within a 100-mile radius of Canyon, Texas. So it's kind of a neat idea that horses are still very much a workforce here. And there are many people, a big population of us, that actually earn their living on the back of a horse. So it's a really neat area of the country, especially for horse people and agriculture people, because that's really and truly where we still are rooted here in agriculture.
Got it. All right. Very good.
And what's so great about West Texas, Glenn, is that she actually coaches an intercollegiate team. So with that Intercollegiate Horse Show Association team, there are a variety of horses there at Canyon that we're going to have the pleasure of meeting when we're out there. And they do English and the Western work both. So a diverse herd, which is fun.
Now, isn't it relatively flat and then all of a sudden there's the hole in the ground?
Yes, pretty much. Is that we are impressed that the pioneers made it this far and avoided the giant hole in the ground on their wagons.
I know, because what I remember, I've never been there, but what I remember hearing about is you're just going along and all of a sudden there's the canyon. It's like
yes, there's no tiny cracks leading up to it. It is literally, if you're not paying attention, you're going to fall off the face of the earth, and Christopher Columbus would have discovered you much, much later. So it's an interesting place, and it's definitely the High Plains is what we call this area, and the High Plains essentially goes from the panhandle of Texas all the way up through Nebraska up towards Wyoming. And we all have the same type of climate in this area, which is a lot of wind, makes doing your hair a little challenging at times. You have well-exfoliated skin, though, is the good news. And we have a whole lot of wheat, we have a whole lot of pasture land, and a whole lot of agriculture.
Now, are there a lot of horses in your area? It's a big horsey area?
Very much so. Actually, our neighbor just up the road, about 15 miles, is the American Quarter Horse Association. And this is essentially stock horse country, is that we have a lot of stock horses. Just due to the nature of what we do here in agriculture is that this is a big horse community. Probably the biggest thing that we have in our area is we have a very strong foothold in reining, cow horse, and cutting. Those cattle type events and performance events are probably our most common ones that you see at competitions. However, we have everything from a dressage association. We've got hunter jumper people in this area. We have people that play polo down south of us in Lubbock. So we do have a diverse horse entity as well. But in West Texas, it is pretty spread out. So a normal situation is to drive 100 miles to get to a lesson around here. That is not uncommon. So you really got to want it because we got a lot of space out here.
And if you're riding English, you're just feeling lonely.
That's when I have kids that come out to the university to look at West Texas A&M as a potential college, and they're hunt seat riders. It's very common that they'll get here and they're excited about riding for an equestrian team. They say, "Can I bring my horse?" And we say, "Sure, we can bring your horse." They go, "Can I compete on my horse?" And I said, "Maybe, if you want to drive 4 hours." So it is a little more spread out than that. And the hunt seat is definitely growing. We have some really good trainers in the area. However, it is still rooted very much in the Quarter Horse Association as our hunt seat world around here. There's some bigger A shows with the USEF in Albuquerque, Waco, Oklahoma City, but here in Amarillo, it's honestly not it's not what we're best known for, although we've got a good little niche market of it.
Got it. Very good. All right, Christy, I'm done hogging the interview now.
Oh, you're fine. So, Amanda, we're going to talk today about lesson plans, both during the lesson and homework for riders. And, the audience here listening, there's definitely going to be some instructors, but there's also going to be a lot of folks that own their own horse and want to be able to have some information when they get on their horse and they go into their arena and they go, all right, I got 30 minutes to ride. What should I work on? What are some things besides just going around the rail, reversing, going around the rail, that I can do to benefit my horse and myself? So just to kind of give me an overview, what types of students do you primarily have there, age-wise and things like that, and what are most of their goals?
Gotcha. Well, I certainly have a blessing here at West Texas that I teach in a university program. So we have the traditional college student age of 18 to 22-year-olds. That's kind of the group that we deal the most with. Probably 90% of our riders fall into that age category. And honestly, about 70% of those are females. So as you look at the population of the horse world in general, that male to female gender role is very similar in the college level as well. And we have some non-traditional students that are in the upper 20s. We have students that come back to school to try to get their second degree or whatever it may be. However, the majority of our students do fall in that average college age category. What's the good news there is that typically they're athletically able. They are good learners because they're just coming out of high school. So we are very blessed to have a really good group of students here to teach through not only my classes that I teach, which I teach an intro to horsemanship class once a week, which is college credit, intro to hunt seat and jumping, which is a twice a week riding class. And then I have finally an advanced horsemanship class, which really focuses on those Western performance events And those are my main riding events that I teach through the university on top of any teams that we also instruct, which we have an equestrian team here, as mentioned, our Intercollegiate Horse Show Association. We have a stock horse team, which really focuses on that ranch heritage of cow horse, reining, trail, and pleasure, and both those being ranch trail and ranch pleasure. And then we have a traditional rodeo team as well. So we stay pretty active out here riding-wise, but it is mainly catered towards the university students.
Super. So out of all your teaching experiences, I know you've done a lot even prior to coming there to the university. What is your favorite lesson to teach and why?
Favorite lesson definitely has to be those really eager brand new beginners. And those are definitely our most favorite ones to teach. And we honestly, you know, you can't pick favorites as a teacher. It's not allowed. But the ones that are eager, that are excited, that have, they're a clean slate. They have no bad habits they learned over time. They have no preconceived notions. And those that are willing to say, okay, yeah, whatever we're going to do, I'll do it. Because I come up with some pretty inventive lessons and analogies to teach with. And those that are willing to step off and try it wholeheartedly. So one of our kind of lessons that we use in probably every single discipline that we teach at every level is honestly in the serpentine. The serpentine lessons are my favorite lessons to teach. I think that it teaches bending and lateral control of the horse, creating inside bend, outside bend. It creates straightness across the straightaway, being able to collect and lengthen across the serpentines. Those are truly where we get a lot of work done at the walk, the jog, extended trot, as well as a lope and a canter. We can work on lead changes through serpentines. We can work on straightness. We can work on bend. We can work on guiding. We can also work on a centered rider. That's one of our favorite ones, is to be able to go through there on their serpentine, and actually we'll have them drop their outside stirrup every time they come through the bend of the serpentine. When they cross the center line, they have to swap their stirrup and then drop their new outside stirrup. And you'll be amazed at how many riders really create their balance off of their feet rather than their center of gravity. And so it's an interesting lesson that we can be humbling at times for that college-age student that says, my horse just at home has a hard time picking up that left lead. Well, we find out that you are constantly in the wrong stirrup, and we start to fix those things. And they take it home, and they get to apply it to their home horse. And it's a really fun lesson they get to teach with the serpentine.
I love that. So why do you do, just explain to the listeners, why do you want them to drop their outside stirrup?
Yeah, certainly. So when we serpentine through our arena, we actually have a fairly small arena. It's only 80 foot by about 120. We don't have a ton of room, which is why we started using serpentine so much, just to create more footage in there. So as we're creating that, is oftentimes you'll see that as a rider, if they're doing a good job looking where they want to go and guiding from their body and using their eyes as a natural aid, is that oftentimes they start to scoot their body weight to the outside of the saddle, which is a good thing in a lot of ways. We always talk about having 51% of your weight in your outside stirrup. It shouldn't be 99%. It shouldn't be 75%. It should just be 51% is on the outside. That lightens the horse inside ability to pick up the inside lead. It allows them to bend without leaning to the inside because they're not having to compensate for an off-centered rider. Off-centered meaning that if you're slipping and sliding up there, your horse is going to do his very best to stay underneath of you, unless he's a naughty school horse, which we have a couple of those too. But for the most part, they want to stay underneath of you. They're hard workers, and they say, you're making my job very hard. We always talk about, you know, if you put a toddler on your shoulders as you're going through the carnival and they see something every 2 steps and they go, ooh, look at that. Ooh, look at that. And that little toddler on your shoulders is dragging you all over the carnival. It's not a very enjoyable experience for the person on bottom. The same idea applies to a rider that gets off center sitting on top of their horse. And so that serpentine drop in the outside stirrup, that's typically the one that we're going to weigh it the most in and almost use as a crutch, I would say. So it really takes away that crutch and makes that center of gravity come from the base of support of the rider, the upper thigh, as well as the seat, rather than from way down low in their feet.
That is such a good idea, especially picking up a lead, because, of course, we want to weight that outside seat bone. But if you weight that outside seat bone too much, right, so having them drop that outside stirrup as they're doing their lead changes and things, I just love that idea. That makes really good sense. So go ahead then, and let's chat just for a moment about your most challenging lesson topic to teach, so that listeners are kind of aware of some things that might be pretty hard to teach, and what are some solution steps that they're trying to maybe work with that you can help them with on their own horses.
Certainly. So definitely some challenging ones. I think it's funny that sometimes the things that we enjoy teaching the most are maybe out of our comfort zone once you get that under control. And the things that challenge us the most are sometimes the things that we hold near and dear to our heart because they're natural for us as a rider. Sometimes they're difficult to put into words. I would say one of the challenging lessons for me to teach, honestly, is for sliding stops. I teach in a big group of reiners within our equestrian team. I teach an advanced horsemanship class that deals with sliding stops. And once you get a student really good at listening and really good at wanting to use all of their natural aids, and they're really excited about that next level of riding, sometimes we overthink and we overwork stuff. And so in a sliding stop, it's so much based on the horse and allowing that horse to stop well, as opposed to making a horse stop good in a sliding stop. So we find that riders often get quick with their hand, or they jam their seat down in the saddle very hard, or they'll do what we call double clutch, where they accidentally kick the horse twice as they're stopping, and that horse hits the ground. They accidentally kick them, and then they push back down in their stirrups. There's a lot of small things that go into a sliding stop, and it becomes something where, as you explain that next level to them, they start to overthink it, and they go, oh, okay, well, I want to do it really well because I don't want to get in trouble for doing it bad. And then they try too much, and that horse says, you're not letting me do my job anymore. And so we always joke around in our reining practices, and we talk that the very best sliding stops in an NRHA show, when you go to a National Reining Horse Show and you watch stops, those that are the very best are those wonderful open riders. But the other people who I would say second to that are honestly those green as grass riders, those people who have no experience in riding, no experience in competition, and this is their first horse show or their first year of horse showing. And when they run down there and slide, they have no idea something bad can happen. They don't know what they're asking for. They just run down there. They say, whoa, they sit, and they lightly pull on the rein. And the horse says, I gotcha. I'm going to stop really good for you. And sometimes because they're so natural and they're not overthinking it, they have better stops than some of our non-pros do, than some of our youth do, because they're allowing that horse to do a good job. So once we start getting riders to let it be natural, and sometimes because we teach it at a high level, we forget about the natural part of riding and allowing a horse to do its job, something it's bred to do, it's been trained to do for years and years and years, and not getting in their way. So I'd say that's one of my more challenging lessons, just that idea of feel, timing, and patience in a sliding stop.
Absolutely. You brought up a really good point that people make really good teachers normally with something that they have personally struggled with as a rider, because then they've had to work so hard at it in many different ways to accomplish it. Whereas when something comes really easily to a rider, that person then trying to teach it and explain it might be a little bit more challenging because they've only tried it the one way, and the one way always works. So why do I need 10 other ways to learn how to do
Certainly.
It? So I love that. So could you, Amanda, give our listeners some other great lesson plans besides the serpentine that they can do on their own in the arena with their horses?
Yeah, certainly. So what we find is, especially with us with our small arena here, and I'm sure other people are certainly in our boat where maybe they only have a round pen to ride in, maybe they only have, you know, a certain area of their pasture dug up, or a small area or a large area, it doesn't really matter what. But sometimes we get stuck on the rail, like you mentioned at the beginning of our call, is that we live on the rail, we'll reverse, we get crazy, we turn to the inside, we make sure that we get off the rail eventually, and we go back to the rail. And it's this, you know, giant force beam that's pulling us in and sucking us into that rail. So we always talk about when you get to an arena, typically if you look at an arena in the dirt, we always see the rut. We see the rut where the horse's feet have gone 9,000 times around and around like it's one giant carousel. So we talk a lot about not living life in the rut. We cannot live our lessons in the rut. You must get out of the rut and experience new things. And so some fun things that we really do to just get them out of a rut is, I think one of the funnest things about riding horses is when you show up to an arena and it's freshly drug, and you see those lines from the tractor, you see those lines from the drag, and you think, ooh, I can't wait to make footprints in that. And then you ride and it's still stuck in the rut and you forgot to make any new footprints out there. So usually my first lesson of the day, something fun that we do, is we get off the rail and the riders have to write their name in cursive at a walk and a jog. They have to dot their I's, they have to cross their T's, and they have to write their horse's name or their name in the ground in cursive on horseback.
I can't do that with a pen.
And the thought process, you'll see a lot of tongues sticking out of the mouth on both a horse and a rider trying to remember on how to use their cursive well.
Yes, exactly.
But it's a fun thing to just get them out there and doing something different. And we do a lot of things like that. We'll also do a lot of partner work. If you're doing group lessons, a lot of times one of the greatest skills to teach, I think, a horse and rider pair is the idea of rate. We use rate in every activity on horses. You can think about rate from a pleasure rider, rating a barrel as a barrel racer, rating a cow as a roper. You're going to rate a jump if you're a fence rider. We use rate in every idea, which is the idea of lengthening and shortening to find a perfect distance to an object. So we like to use that in some of our activities. And if we're doing a group lesson, I'll pair them up and you have a buddy and you have to be able to stay close enough to high five. We have to, you know, definitely do our good pairing of grumpy horses versus not grumpy horses in that. But you have to be in high five distance, and we're going to go work a pattern together. So the outside horse is always lengthening. The inside horse has to shorten to be able to stay shoulder to shoulder the entire time. And it's the idea of a drill team, but we keep it in pairs so it stays safe. And if they get really good at that, we'll put the pairs together and we'll make groups of four, and they'll have to go through a figure eight together. They'll have to do transitions from the walk and the jog together. If we get really wild with our reiners, sometimes we'll take them up to a lope and we'll have them work each other in a working cow horse pattern. But the idea of rating a real object that is moving really makes a rider engage their brain, makes a horse engage, and you'll see that a lot of horses get excited, and not in a negative way, but it gives them a true job as opposed to just plodding along that rail when they have to go to something. I have to get there. I'm late. I have to be somewhere right now. So we love that idea of working on rate through rating different objects, especially a moving object. So those are two really fun ones that we've used in the past a lot.
Those are super and really creative ideas. I have never heard the cursive one before, and I'm sitting here thinking, gosh, how would I do that? My name's kind of long. I don't know.
You may have to stop, do a turn on the haunches. You may have to come across, and if you got to dot your I for Christy, you may have to stop over there and do a little spin on the haunches to make sure that you've got your I dotted properly. And there may have to be a little flying lead change if you're going to do it at the lope all the way through the pattern. And so it makes it very fun.
So creative. It makes me want to go back and be a student again at West Texas A&M University and do all this fun stuff with my friends on horseback. That's what it makes me want to do.
I have to disagree with you there.
Why, Glenn?
Being a student again, that whole thing just...
You don't want to do all of that again. No.
No.
You're good.
Had enough of that the first time. But I wasn't at West Texas A&M, see?
See? You might have gone on to get your master's or PhD if you were there. You never know.
I know. I could have. Well, now, you guys, I totally lost my train of thought there. Go ahead, Christy. Lost my train of thought.
Oh, good. Well, I'll just continue the interview, Glenn.
Okay. I had
so
a question.
I have another question for you, Amanda, that I think is a good one, too. You know, we tend to always think, oh, well, I'm just going to go ride my horse, and then I'm just going to do it that way. But in between times, you know, riding is a sport, and we need to keep ourselves physically fit. And I know you are Miss CrossFit Girl, and I actually introduced you in your bio, of course, as liking CrossFit. And I've just begun a little bit of that myself, though I'm not nearly, I'm sure, as good at it as you are. But what do you have for homework for your riders when they're off their horses to keep them stretched out, physically fit? Do you do anything like that with them?
We certainly do here at West Texas. Because we're an athletic sport with our equestrian team, we have a wonderful benefit and advantage of working with personal trainers through our athletic department to keep our riders in shape. We always joke that we want to pride ourselves on being the strongest team out there, that when a judge asks our riders to drop their stirrups in the pen, they go, it's great, I could go for days, no big deal. So definitely the cardio side of things, I think, is a really easily overlooked idea. As far as a homework for a rider, is that we think that our cardio happens on our horse, but really and truly, that's when our horse's cardio is happening. So if we finish an hour lesson and we're beat red and we're huffing and a puffing, did we really utilize that leg well the last 15 minutes of our lesson? Or were we fatigued and tired and allowing our horse to make mistakes that otherwise, if we were in shape, we wouldn't be allowing them to make? So the cardio side is a big one to keep up on, and I can't stress that enough to any of our riders, and especially if you've ever taught lessons, I think that that's an easy one to remember, because if you've walked, you know, 5 miles around a sand arena, you remember how important cardio is, and I tell my students that all the time. I'm like, I'm chasing you down 8 hours a day. You're sitting on top living a life. And so that's definitely a little part of it there is the cardio side, but I think there's some really good exercises that specifically pertain to riding on top of that. One of those has to do with stretching and flexibility. Those people who are flexible out there, who maybe do yoga and things like that and have just always been flexible, they take that for granted, and we kind of forget that some people and some riders really have to work at that. So flexibility is one of the biggest things I think a rider should work on. So that way, when we start to talk about body positioning and moving a leg here, lifting your hands here, stretching your torso here, that your body can actually get there, especially for our older riders that are starting to get a little tighter. Maybe they work an office job and they're sitting majority of the day. Your muscles are going to start to tighten up. They're going to have a little bit of shrinkage. We're going to have a less range of motion. And then when you get on your horse for that weekly lesson, all of a sudden your trainer says, let's pull your leg back here, and you just physically can't get it there, nor will it even stay. So we actually do a lot of team yoga within our equestrian program. Yoga has been a big one for us to increase flexibility, stretch, range of motion, especially in our riders' calves and Achilles. We found that, we get a lot of riders that come in with a very tight Achilles. They're not used to pressing their heel down as much as we'd like to see it. So a lot of Achilles stretches, we'll have them stand on the stairs and we'll say, okay, you're going to take your book, whatever you're studying for. Maybe that's college algebra today. Maybe that's history. And you're going to stand with your book on the edge of the stairs for at least 10 minutes today, really stretching that calf out and making sure that you have the depth to be able to push that heel down the saddle. Because if you don't have the stretch and the depth, we won't be able to build the strength there either. So that's a really important one. And to go back to our favorite activity, Christy, which is CrossFit. Actually, my assistant coach is a CrossFitter as well. Her name is Hannah, and she's a great asset to our program. And we started talking the other day about the posting trot, because sometimes we have a new rider come to our program who, if they've come from a Western background or they're just new to riding in general, the posting trot sometimes is a rhythm issue that riders have a hard time grasping. What's the rhythm of the horse? How do I rise with the rhythm and not whack my horse in the back on the way back down and find that up, down idea? Well, what we equated it to and what we're going to start to utilize more this year is it's the same idea as a kettlebell swing, is the funny thing, is the idea of going into a squat, not pinching from your knee, because that's one of the biggest issues we see on new hunt seat riders. They want to pinch from their knee and let their lower leg get out and away from the horse, when really we need to wrap the lower part of the calf around the horse to support and ask them to lift their belly through the ride. And that's the same idea in a kettlebell swing. We also want to make sure that that rider is lightly and controlled coming back down into the saddle and not just flopping on the horse's back. And so when you have a weight in your hand, there is no flopping anything around, or you're going to throw a weight through the wall or through the mirror, wherever you may be working out at. And then the other idea that I think is really advantageous to a kettlebell swing and that posting trot is the idea of holding the pressure in the rein and having that horse up on the bridle and keeping that weight in your hand. Is it on a great equitation horse or a great hunter? Is you are going to hold that horse up slightly until they learn to hold themselves. So we have a lot of riders, when they learn the posting trot, they drop the horse's face, pick it back up, and they almost use their hand to be able to post in the trot rather than their leg muscles. So the idea of the kettlebell swing is that you have a constant feel in your hand the entire time. You don't throw the kettlebell up in the air and then catch it again, is that you're having that same feel all the way up. So we thought that was a great idea to start stressing a little bit more to help those riders that are really struggling through that posting trot, was to use their kettlebell swings in that.
That is a great idea. So now you have kettlebells in the barn aisle?
We do have a few, actually. My old assistant and I actually made some out of basketball, so we're pretty frugal people around here, and we will make anything work. So I think that kettlebell is going to go live at the tack room door, and if we struggle, then we're going to come, we're going to bring that kettlebell in, and we're going to work on it there in the arena.
You're absolutely right, though. You know, so many people, when they first start riding, what they're used to sitting on is a chair or a couch. So what do? They sit and they shove their legs in front of them. And what they don't realize is riding a horse is basically a squat. That's what you're doing the entire time you ride. And that takes a lot of muscle, even at the walk, to sit in squat position correctly, right? Because squat position, if you try to do a wall sit right now, or you try to go ahead and stand in goddess pose in yoga or some sort of a squat if you're doing CrossFit or whatever the case may be, boy, you start to shake after a while. And if you're not using your hamstrings and your glutes correctly and you're making your quadriceps do all the work, or you're pushing down on your toe, you're going to fall down. Whereas if you're rocking back onto those heels and doing what you should be doing, yeah, absolutely. So I love that idea of how you do the cross training for your students, to be able to go ahead and have horseback riding be a sport like that. So it'll benefit them as a rider, and it'll also benefit their horse.
Yeah, certainly.
Well, really good, Amanda. Well, we are almost out of time today. So if you could go ahead and leave our listeners with one thing exciting that you are thrilled to have them come and do. You know, we are going to be doing a coupon code called HRN, which stands for Horse Radio Network, for any of the listeners to be able to come to conference. And, of course, the end of this month is our early bird registration. So they'll be able to get the CHA member pricing and the early bird registration if they put HRN in their coupon code on our website. So if you could let the listeners know something exciting about West Texas and about coming to see you to get them motivated to come, what would you tell them?
We are so excited for all of the population to head on out to Amarillo, Texas and Canyon for the Certified Horsemanship Association International Conference. And there is going to be so much to do, guys. And honestly, that's what my one thing is that there's so many more than one thing that you're going to be involved in. Is that here in West Texas, we're excited to invite you to Cowboy Country. We're excited to feed you some great steak dinners and show you the Paladura Canyon, show you the American Florida Horse Association and get you involved. And really and truly where stock horses began and where they started to flourish in America. And this is really and truly that, is that you're going to get to experience a piece of history in the equine culture. And this is where the Western mentality really began, was here in Texas. And so we're so excited to have everyone here. And I highly encourage everyone to head on out and use that coupon code and come see us here in Canyon.
As far as transportation, do you fly into Amarillo?
Yes, that is probably the easiest option, is to fly into Amarillo, and we're just 15 miles away from there. However, if you wanted to get into Dallas-Fort Worth area, it's only 5 hours away from us, and Albuquerque would also only be 4 hours away.
I love how people in Texas always say, oh, it's only a five-hour drive. They always say that, and it's like, oh,
morning.
Yeah, it's just next door.
True. That's how we work, is that we are covering the world. We always joke that here in West Texas, it's flat and it's large, and you can watch your dog run away for 2 days before he ever gets out of sight.
That's funny.
Well, Amanda, thank you so much for being on the show today. It was our pleasure to have you, and we'll see you very soon.
Thank you so much, Christy, and thank you, Glenn.
All right, thanks a lot. We're going to play a little song here so everybody can take a break, and we're going to come back with more of the show on the Certified Horsemanship Association on Horses in the Morning. We'll be right back after this song.
You better look down that road before you get on. Turn around, take one last look behind. Hey, pick up a little dirt, run it through your hands, then carve your favorite memories in your mind. 'Cause all you've ever dreamed of was riding the rodeo. Before you learn to hold on, you gotta learn to let go. You gotta learn that your time in the saddle ain't as rough as life in between. Isn't there for you to straddle, and you can't change horses in the middle of your dream. Just soon be gone, but take time, study your back trail. 'Cause what you've learned today may help tomorrow, but leaving's the only way to tell. Well, you can't put a price tag on the fun and rodeo, but you don't get a free ride, you'll pay as you go. You gotta learn that your time in the saddle ain't as rough as a life in between, and the fence isn't there for you to straddle, and you can't change horses in the middle of your dream. Hey, you gotta learn that your time in the saddle ain't as rough as a life in between.
Well, welcome back, everyone. Thanks so much for listening today. Our next guest is Kara Musgrave, and Kara works at the Life Adventure Center of the Bluegrass, where they offer English riding lessons and vaulting, and they use horses to teach team building, good communication, and self-esteem. Kara has done a lot in her years as not only a riding instructor, but also as a horse trainer. She is also very involved with the Certified Horsemanship Association as our regional director, and we are thrilled to have you on today. Kara, welcome.
Awesome, thanks.
Is there any more of your background that you would like to share with the listeners before we get started with today's topic about lesson plans and ideas in the arena and homework for riders?
Sure. I grew up in near Asheville, North Carolina, and I did some hunt seat riding and I got a thoroughbred off the track as a sophomore, and was able to train him for my personal riding, and then later was able to use him in a lesson program. I went to Asbury College in Wilmore, Kentucky, and then kind of got the feeling of the horse country up here and never really left. So I'm still in the Lexington area. And since being here, I've grown an appreciation for eventing and have become a little bit of a dressage nerd, which is kind of fun.
I'll forgive you for that.
Only in relation to good biomechanics for the horse, which is something I'm really passionate about. and, you know, here at the Life Adventure Center, I'm able to use horses to teach things like leadership and communication, like Christy said, in our mission. And my major was actually in leadership and experiential education, and I never dreamed that I could combine that with my horse passion to be at one place. So that's pretty cool.
Tell us about the center. Where is it, and what do you do there?
So we are located in Versailles, Kentucky, which is spelled Versailles,
is that right?
But pronounced Versailles. Yeah. And so we're a 575-acre nonprofit farm, and we have an excellent horsemanship program. We also have lots of other programs like the high and low ropes course. We do outdoor adventure, we do environmental education, and lots of other stuff, but we kind of use the outdoors and horses and all of the tools we have at the farm and sometimes off-site to do experiential education, which is learning things like team building, good leadership, communication, resiliency, those kind of things. So we see that nature and horses as all being awesome tools to learn those things.
Is it all kids or is it adults too?
We see a variety of groups. Most of our groups are kids. We do have a few groups that come out. Like, we have military groups, which are mostly adults. Sometimes it's military families. So with that, we get kind of a range. Most of our riders and summer camp participants are kids, but we see a variety, which is neat.
That is cool, and I'm looking at the pictures on the website, and it looks like you got rock climbing, and you got the, as you said, you got the ropes course, and all kinds of different stuff.
Yeah, we got all kinds of stuff out here.
Huh, very cool. I didn't even know that was there. I lived in Lexington for 4 years. I never even knew this was there. So.
Oh, well, next time you're here, come out and visit us.
Yeah, very cool. All right, Christy.
All right, well, I wish that my boys lived close by, because, you know, they're 8 and 10 now. And they would have so much fun there doing all of those things. When I feel a little bit braver and I'm willing to send them to overnight camp out of state, this was the first summer that they went to overnight camp in state, and they both loved it. The 8-year-old and 10-year-old both. They just thought it was really, really fun and to kind of be away and be on their own and that independence. And maybe one day when they're a little older, I'll be brave enough to actually put them on an airplane and do something like that with them or drive them out there. I don't know. We'll have to see.
There you go.
So in your riding program, Kara, what is your favorite lesson topic to teach? We have a variety of listeners on today. Some of them are going to be instructors themselves. Others are going to be people that have their own horses and want to learn and grow. So what are your favorite lesson topics to teach and why?
So one of my favorite topics is the, like, first time jumping. For me, jumping was always like the thing that I couldn't wait to work up to and try and do. And even since then, I felt, you know, it's kind of freeing and magical when you get to do some jumping. So, and that you always remember your first jump. There's a video of me as a 7-year-old trotting up to a Cavaletti, and the horse jumps and I get left behind and do like the whiplash thing. And it was my first time over a jump and I could not have been happier. So that's always kind of a magical lesson for me.
And what I love about that is even if you're not going to do jumping, reality is if you're going down the trail with your horse, it's probably going to jump something at some point, be it a log on the ground or a small stream. So knowing how to even do it in a Western saddle and put your hand over the horn to protect yourself and go into that point so you can let the horse's back come up without meeting your rear end is a really smart thing. So I think that you're absolutely right. I think teaching that first jump is huge.
Absolutely.
So what do you think are your most challenging lesson topics, the ones that are hard to teach and that students have a hard time grasping, and some solution steps that you would help people on with those?
Yeah, so I always get hung up with the first time cantering. I grew up, I was taught to canter by basically getting in 2-point and taking your horse till they cantered, which isn't always the best way to do it. It, you know, it encourages the horse to kind of run into the canter, and your canter ends up being usually a little quicker and less balanced than you probably want. And so having to retrain myself to do it well has been a little bit of a journey, and I still like get anxiety around it. And so I know that probably comes across in my lesson. Some things that I do now, as opposed to earlier in my teaching career, is we have the benefit of having awesomely trained vaulting horses and vaulting tack, and we're actually able to have our students experience the canter before they're the ones controlling the horse getting into and out of the canter. Because often the canter is not challenging to ride. It's usually pretty smooth depending on your horse. But getting your horse into a good canter is a little bit more challenging. And then that big fast trot coming out of the canter can sometimes be a little challenging as well. So what I do now is, you know, we talk about it, we watch some canter, we learn about the footfalls and how your horse actually takes off into the canter, because I think understanding some of those mechanics helps the rider know what to do and why we're doing it. And then we actually get kids on the barrel, our vaulting barrel, which looks like a mock horse, and it's wearing handles very similar to our vaulting surcingle, which, you know, for people that don't know what that is, it goes on similar to a saddle or like a lunging surcingle, but it's got handles mounted on it, and it's specific for vaulting. And we actually have the kids practice asking for a canter transition on our barrel, which is cool. You know, our barrel doesn't move afterwards, but then we try it on the lunge line with an instructor controlling the horse. We have our horses go into a canter, come back out of a canter, do that a couple times, and then after a lesson or two doing that, rather than the instructor asking the horse to canter and then come back to a trot, we actually see if the rider can do it with their seat and leg. And then the next step there is, you know, giving them the reins. So that's kind of my process. Hopefully that makes sense
wonderful.
To you guys.
We did a vaulting show on the CHA Horse Radio Network show a few months ago, and you can find that either on our website, chainstructors.com, and go to our video tab, and Horse Radio Show tab is there as well. Or you can go ahead, of course, and find it on Horse Radio Network. But vaulting is key, and I love the fact that, you know, you do that there at the Life Adventure Center. I think that really does help people. I always tell people that one of the hardest transitions in the horse world, I feel, is coming out of canter down into trot.
Oh, my gosh. Absolutely. Because, you know, we've had a lot of thoroughbreds out here, so that's not a small trot. That is a big old trot. And, you know, something that you can do if you don't have the benefit of a vaulting surcingle is, you know, just doing a lunge line lesson in the regular tack or something like that. I do always make sure that I've like practiced lunging the horse at the canter, because, you know, a lot of times that doesn't happen super often. So you want to make sure they're going to behave for you before you put a kid on them. And I'll usually even warm up the horse without someone on the lunge line before I'll do the canter lunge line lesson.
No, those are just great things. So for the listeners as a whole, that, you know, we get in the arena and we tend to just think, oh, what am I going to do today? Just go on the rail. You know, what am I going to do? So what are some of your great lesson plans that you would love to go ahead and share with our listeners today?
Well, I love using arena patterns to teach, you know, steering and transitions. And the great thing is, you know, if you've got this great plan, like we're going to trot a serpentine today, and the student just does it like they've been doing it forever, and, you know, it's more or less perfect, you can you can move up from there and say, okay, we're going to canter part of it, or we're going to add transitions at each loop, or whatever it is. So I love using arena patterns because there's just so much that you can really focus in on. And, you know, sometimes my focus for the day might be really good turns or really straight lines or really accurate transitions from one gate to the next. But that's something that I use a lot. Another favorite is having kids do a course over poles and like, a complicated jumper course, but just being over ground poles just to teach good turns, accurate turns, without them having to worry about the actual jumping part. And that's great for kids that aren't ready to jump yet, or kids that are just starting to do more complicated patterns over jumps. Because a lot of times, you know, with riding, we all know that you've got to have so many things going on all at the same time to make it work. So if you can take one element away and focus on one thing specifically, get that down, and then you can kind of move on to the next. So that's another one I really enjoy doing.
I love that idea of poles on the ground, because I'll tell you, there's a lot of ways to go over a pole, and some of them are not right, like going over really far to the left or really far to the right instead of in the middle. And, you know, a lot of horses will not have that cadence going over the pole, and they'll try to hop over it. So then getting your horse to go in a circle with a bunch of poles until they get to the point where every time they go over a pole, they just treat it like it's just the dirt on the ground, and they just trot over it with rhythm, or they canter over it with rhythm. And that's a great idea before they start to do a course. Then you can have them go into 2-point every time they get to it, or whatever the case may be. So I love that.
Yeah. It's also really great for teaching that timing of when to get into 2-point and when to sit back up. And that's another reason I really like that particular lesson.
Yeah, so you can definitely get up way too early and way too late, and you can come out of it way too early and way too late, and it can cause issues. So I think that's super.
One advantage to carriage driving is we don't have the 2-point.
What?
Just saying.
A strong inner thighs is a good thing. How do you get a strong inner thigh when you drive the cart?
I'll tell you how. I can answer that question. It's when your pony bolts and you sit straight up with your, you know, you're bracing. That's how you get strong inner thighs. And I've had, unfortunately, I've had a lot of practice with that with my Hackney pony. So unfortunately, we're working through that.
There you go. So you're getting a strong core muscle that way
from
the bolting.
Yes, it's amazingly quick. It doesn't last very long, but it's a little scary along the way. So
there you go. So you get the adrenaline rush too.
Yes, exactly.
You get your cardio. Your heart is racing.
See, I always thought this was a bad thing. Now you've convinced me that his bolting is good.
See?
It's a good thing. So, thank you, Christy. Appreciate that.
Yeah, sure. No problem. I'm here for you. So speaking of cardio and keeping ourselves in shape, you know, we were having a conversation earlier, Kara, about a lot of what we do with our horses is on the ground, right? We don't get an opportunity, unfortunately, to get on them a whole lot. So do you have any exercises to do with your horse on the ground for the listeners that you enjoy teaching there at the Life Adventure Center of the Bluegrass?
Yes. I am a huge fan of groundwork for horse and rider. I think it's super important. I personally stretch my horse's legs every time I get done riding, especially if we've done some intense work or some jumping or something like that. I'll always give him stretches to do. And then I give my riders a lot of homework because, you know, if you ride 1 hour a week, that's not really enough to give you that balance and that strength and that coordination. Our vaulters right now, they actually have a fitness plan that has, like, different things that they need to be able to do by the end of our semester. It's, like, 10 push-ups, a couple sit-ups. I don't remember the whole thing. I wish I had it in front of me. But we give them a fitness plan, as vaulting is pretty intense on the exercise realm. But one of my favorite exercises that I give my riders, especially ones working on balance in 2-point, is I'll have them find a step somewhere, preferably with a wall or a rail, and make them stand on the balls of their feet with their heels hanging off the edge of the step. And first thing I ask them to do is just kind of balance. with their heels hanging down like they would if they were sitting in the saddle. And then moving towards being able to squat down into a modified two-point, and then eventually letting go of that railing and being able to hold it as long as possible. If they get really good at that, I'll have them actually try coming up on their tiptoes and going back down to their heels down in that simulated two-point position. So that's one of my favorites that I like to have them do. Other homework stuff I'll have is I have a lot of people make sure they stretch when they get off. You know, I work with a lot of riders that are older too, and you know, it gets hard when you get older. You're not a kid anymore. You know, stretching is actually something that you really gotta do, or you're not gonna be able to walk the next morning. So we do a lot of that as well.
I think you're still right about that. You know, we all need to use our core muscles to ride and do all those kinds of things. And sometimes I think we just think, well, if we're not in the barn, we really can't do anything to improve our riding. But there is so much we can do off the horse, too, that's a benefit through the stretching and things.
Yeah.
Can you go into a little bit more detail for our listeners? What are the different types of stretches that you do with your horses? I know I do this thing where I'm not a believer in feeding treats by hand. I think it causes nipping.
Sure.
However, I have a lot of, and it doesn't matter whether they're a kid or an adult, that come and take lessons from me who really want that interaction. They want to feed the horse a treat. So we do what we call carrot stretches, but with treats. And it's always away from the tie rail. And the three that we do, and my horses are so used to it now, they probably walk themselves over after we're done grooming, stand and do the stretches without the treat, or wait until they got the treat and then do the next stretch. But it's one that moves to the hip on one side, the hip on the other side, and then a modified bow where they don't go all the way down to a front leg being placed on the ground. But I'll tell you, I hear snap, crackle, and pop going on, and I'm thinking, oh, I just saved myself a little chiropractic adjustment on my horse. And those have been a great way to feed treats and to still get the stretches. So what are some other stretches that you do with the horses?
So I do those. The ones that I focus on the most for my horse, just because he's got some hind-end stuff that occasionally crops up, but I really focus on his hind legs. And, you know, for people that have questions about how to do these properly, because you do want to do them properly where you really actually can injure your horse. But there are a lot of people out there that can help you with that, different chiropractors or whatever. But I do three stretches with all three of his hind legs. And the first one is I'll take a hind leg and try to swing it forward and almost get him to touch his toe to the back of his front hoof. Straight ahead, and the goal being for him to actually set that hoof down and kind of lean into that stretch a little bit, because sometimes they'll feel it and they're like, oh yeah, it feels good. So I do that on both sides, and you can actually, if you can get them to where they're used to it enough to like pull that foot forward, set it on the ground, you can walk away and, you know, finish putting your tack away or whatever, and they can kind of stretch while you're getting them ready or getting them put away. So I do that both sides, and then I do one where I stretch the leg back, and that one, you know, you are behind the horse, so you got to be a little careful. He's a little more resistant with that one, but that kind of stretches the equivalent of like our hip flexors. And then the other one that I do is I take the right hind and stretch it towards the heel of the left front, so across in kind of a diagonal pattern. And that's the same goal of trying to get them to set that hoof on the ground and hold it there for a minute. And that's kind of like our, I want to say glute medius is where that's stretching. And that's another one that I really like. That one, my horse will hold for 5-10 minutes. So...
He really likes it. Yeah, and I think that's huge. You know, the horse is the athlete, and so are we. And those stretches, sometimes they might not naturally do them when they're out in the pasture or out in their stall. And so I agree with you. I think sometimes the horses really enjoy doing those stretches.
Yeah. Something I've noticed with horses that get stretched regularly is they will start to self-stretch. Since I've started doing this, there have been several times that, you know, I'm getting ready to walk out into the arena and my horse will pick up the hind leg and like stretch it way back without any prompting. And so that's kind of interesting to see or they'll do the, I call it the giraffe stretch, where they'll like pick their head way up and stretch their pole all the way up to the ceiling. You know, that's absolutely something that it's hard to get them to do on your own, but it's neat when you see them kind of self-stretching. They're like, oh yeah, that feels pretty good. I'm going to do that again.
Well, Kara, thanks so much for being on the show today. We are to the point of the show where we're going to do some wrap-up, and we just so appreciate you being on. I think it was a great topic today and a lot of good information for our listeners.
Awesome. Great. Well, I enjoyed being here.
And the website is lifeadventurecenter.org, and you can find all the information about the Life Adventure Center over there by Lexington, Kentucky, which all of our listeners certainly know. So is this a camp-type environment? Is it only groups? Can individuals go? That's the one part I'm confused about.
So we do a little bit of everything. And for our riding lessons, we have group riding lessons, but people sign up as individuals for those. We also have group opportunities. So if you had a group of 10 people that wanted to come out and try vaulting, we can do like a one-day, couple-hour session for vaulting or on our challenge course or any of the other stuff that we do.
Okay. So you can combine. So you don't have to just do horses or just rock climbing. You can do a little bit of everything.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. We've had lots of groups come do a morning with the equestrian program and then afternoon with the challenge course.
Well, now you're heading out to Lexington soon, aren't you? Are you going to stop by? Are you going to rock climb and do the ropes course and all that stuff?
Yeah, just because you want video and photo.
That's right.
I know how this game plays.
I was going to call Kara after and make sure that there's video of you doing vaulting and rock climbing. It looks like a fun place, actually.
It does look like a lot of fun, but I'll tell you right now, this almost 6 foot tall body is not a gymnast body, so I don't know. I might be.
Well, they have big horses. You're fine.
That's right. Well, I do want to go see it, and I have not had an opportunity to do so. But yes, I'll be in Lexington coming up here soon, and it'll be fun. Go over to the horse park and see some folks, and then I think stop by and have a little adventure at Life Adventure Center.
I was looking at the pictures, and it kind of reminds me of what our Boy Scout camp used to look like. It's kind of got that rustic feel to it, which is neat.
Yes.
It really is cool. Although you wouldn't have to camp, so that's good.
Right, yeah. Which is nice.
Yeah, that's always good for me anyway.
Me too.
Good show. Good guest. Thank you so much for putting that together, Christy. And of course, you can find out about today's guests and show notes at horsesinthemorning.com. You can follow Horses in the Morning on Facebook. Just search for Horses in the Morning. And you can follow us on Twitter. We don't talk about that very often, at Horse Radio. And the best way to listen to the recorded versions of this show is on our app at Horse Radio Network. Just search on iPhone or Android. It's free and it's easy to use. And you can find the CHA at
CHAinstructors.com. So come one, come all. And if we don't see you in Texas in October at our conference, I hope we see you at something else in the future, or join our social media and start the networking there.
Very good. Thank you, everybody. We'll be back tomorrow with another great show for you. So look for it then.